This is Jim Inkster, and our guest is Meredith May. She spent 16 years at the San Francisco Chronicle. Her narrative reporting won the Penn USA Literary Award for Journalism, and she was shortlisted for the Pulitzer Prize. And she is a fifth-generation beekeeper. Lives in San Francisco, where she keeps several hives in a community garden. And this is pertinent because her book is The Honey Bus, a memoir of loss, courage, and a girl saved by bees. It's an extraordinary story of a girl, her grandfather, and one of nature's most mysterious and beguiling creatures, the honeybee. And this is a subject you know quite well. I'm sure you embrace this assignment with great glee, Meredith May.
I sure did. I mean, I always knew that I was going to write about my family. I had a very unusual upbringing, and I was raised by my grandfather, who had more than 100 hives tucked into the remote canyons of the Big Sur Coast, and it was just a wild place to grow up in the 70s.
Do you recall the first time a honeybee crawled on your arm?
Yes. One of my first interactions with bees, I went with my grandfather to catch a swarm. And bees are very docile when they're in a swarm. And when you see them in a group hanging from a tree, they're actually very docile because they've just eaten a lot of honey to hold them over in between homes. That's what a swarm is. It's going to a new home. So they're full, like after Thanksgiving. But the neighbor, somebody started up a weed whacker and startled the bees, and several of them stung me in the head. And my grandfather didn't want me to develop a fear of bees. So the very next day, he sat me on the porch, and he put a bee on my arm, and I was so scared. But he wanted me to see that they're gentle, that they only sting when they're frightened. And I just watched this beautiful, intricate creature inspect me and then fly off. And I'm glad he did that because I think I would have had PTSD.
Oh, my. Well, you say your parents fought all the time, and these bees became a guiding force in your life, didn't they?
They did. I was about 5 when my parents split, and I wound up at my grandfather's house. And so the one thing that would soothe me would be to hang out with my grandpa in his bee yards, and I would watch how the colony behaves, and it was soothing to me. I didn't understand it at the time, but, for example, I would see the queen bee and the maternal bond with the worker bee daughters, because the queen's the only bee in the hive that can lay eggs, but she can't feed herself or keep warm at night, so she needs her daughters to survive. So I would see this behavior, and it would make me feel better, but I didn't understand why until I was an adult and could reflect back on what sort of hole that was filling for me as a little girl.
So you say you actually got life lessons from the bees.
Yeah, I did. They taught me benevolence. They taught me community, and they taught me selflessness, because if you think about it, a bee colony is the exact opposite of a dysfunctional family. You know, they all have to work together. They all do their little part to make sure the whole community survives. And I think that was an overall really important lesson for me about not giving up and holding on to hope.
Well, what is the honey bus, Meredith?
That's an actual bus. The photograph of it is on the cover of the book, and that's an old World War II Army bus that was marooned in Grandpa's backyard, and he got it for auction at the Fort Ord military base in the 60s, and he gutted it and tore out all the seats and built his honey factory inside out of old spare junk.
What is a magnificent structure, and it is certainly a conversation piece. You say it was like a Willy Wonka miracle in there.
You know, it was amazing. He wouldn't let me in until I was a little older, so I was always trying to find a way to break in. But there was a big honey spinner in there that was about the size of a hot tub, and that's where we put the frames of honey, and it spun out, and then it pumped up through a series of steel pipes he had running the length of the ceiling, and the whole thing was powered by an engine he pulled out of a lawnmower. So it was just like this, yeah, Willy Wonka, Rube Goldberg, steampunk sort of factory. And I spent a lot of hours in there bottling honey with him.
Meredith, you say that beekeeping is a little badass. It is a process that's not for everybody, but as a fifth-generation beekeeper, it was, I guess, genetically predisposed that you would do this.
You know, maybe. You know, when you go to a dinner party and you tell people you're a writer, they say, oh, that's very interesting. If you tell people you're a beekeeper, they are so into it. They want to talk to you all about the bees, or they're honey freaks, or they're worried about the bees and they want to know what they can do. I mean, that's what I mean when I say badass. It just pulls people in like a magnet. And it's in my bones. My grandfather is actually not blood relative. He's a step-grandfather, but I guess that goes to the argument for nature versus nurture, you know?
Yeah.
So my grandfather's great-grandfather was one of the earliest settlers. I'm sorry, two greats. In the 1800s, William Post was one of the first pioneers in Big Sur, and he was a beekeeper. And if you know of the Post Ranch Inn, that's why it's called that. So that's mm-hmm. his lineage.
And when you were with the San Francisco Chronicle, you and your editor kept beehives on the roof of the building, didn't you?
We did, at one of the busiest intersections in the city, too. That took about a year of negotiation with our bosses, but eventually they let us do it. And from 2011 to 2015, we had two hives up there. And you'd be surprised, but urban bees actually have more to eat than country bees. They fly in a 5-mile radius of the hive, and there are so many garden terraces, and people in the city bring plants from all over, so the bloom is year-round. There's no, like, just spring season. So they have, like, a cruise ship buffet of food in a city. It doesn't seem logical, but they did pretty well up there.
How many times have you been stung independent of that first encounter?
Well, these days I get stung about once or twice a year, and it's always when I'm careless, not paying attention, and I put my hand down on a bee and squish it by accident, or I've even forgotten to zip my veil closed and one got into my suit. It's usually my mistake. However, that first year in the Chronicle, I was being kind of a show-off, and I was not suiting up. And when I was getting stung a lot, I was beekeeping in a skirt, and I got stung about 12 times in one spring. And finally, I said, "That's enough," and I bought a suit.
I would think that might do it.
Yeah.
You note that one afternoon about 4 years ago, your grandfather asked you to look after his bees. That was a poignant mm-hmm. moment, wasn't it?
It was, because we were on his porch. He had one hive left. It was toward the end of his life, and he was very frail. So he didn't beekeep anymore, but he would just watch it. And in the afternoons, you can watch the bees come home for the night, and that was his ritual. And, you know, I was sitting with him, and he said, "Well, you'll take that hive if I go, you take that hive. You'll be a beekeeper." And I think he was asking me the larger question, you know, not just that hive, but to step into his shoes.
And those were big shoes.
I know. When I go to Big Sur, if I tell people I'm Franklin Peace's granddaughter, I have, like, VIP access to homes, to restaurants. I mean, he's so beloved. The Big Sur community is actually going to host a Frank Peace Remembrance Day. I mean, we're all, not just me, we're all coming and bringing photos and his letters, and everybody loves him down there. And it's a beautiful thing to see what impact he had on people.
Well, it's an amazing ride on the Honey Bus, a memoir of loss, courage, and a girl saved by bees from Meredith May. Meredith, congratulations, and thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And we hope you're having a good weekend. It is Independence Day weekend, and in New Orleans, that means Essence Fest. And this is the political season, so many Democratic presidential aspirants are at the Essence Fest. It certainly would have been nice to have seen Donald Trump and Mike Pence down in New Orleans at the Essence Fest, but I don't think they're showing. Tomorrow it'll be Kamala Harris at 11:38 p.m., or excuse me, a.m. She'll be there tomorrow at the Essence Fest. Cory Booker in the afternoon. Elizabeth Warren will make an appearance, as will Beto O'Rourke. And then Sunday, Pete Buttigieg. So some of the Democrats have accented New Orleans and Essence Fest, which is one of the big events in our country and certainly one of the major events for African Americans in the United States. And it was on this date 69 years ago that Huey Lewis was born in New York City. And before we go to one of his signature songs, signature support for Talk Louisiana, comes from Brian Lowe Financial. But here is Huey Lewis in the year of 1984, one of his biggest hits, The Heart of Rock and Roll, in which he immortalized none other than Baton Rouge.
D.C., San Antonio, and the Liberty Town, Boston and a